public example, he was saying, in this room because it contains more high-caste workers than any other in the centre. I have told him to meet me here at 2:30.
He does his work very well, put in Henry, with hypocritical generosity.
I know, but that's all the more reason for severity. His intellectual eminence carries with it corresponding moral responsibilities. The greater a man's talents, the greater his power to lead astray. It is better that one should suffer than that many should be corrupted. Consider the matter dispassionately, Mr. Foster, and you will see that no offence is so heinous as unorthodoxy of behaviour. Murder kills only the individual, and, after all, what is an individual? With a sweeping gesture, he indicated the rows of microscopes, the test tubes, the incubators. We can make a new one with the greatest ease, as many as we like. Unorthodoxy threatens more than the life of a mere individual. It strikes at society itself. Yes, at society itself, he repeated. Ah, but here he comes. Bernard had entered the room and was advancing between the rows of fertilizers towards them. A veneer of jaunty self-confidence thinly concealed his nervousness. The voice in which he said, "Good morning, Director," was absurdly too loud. That in which, correcting his mistake, he said, "You asked me to come and speak to you here," ridiculously soft, a squeak. "Yes, Mr. Marks," said the Director portentously. "I did ask you to come to me here. You returned from your holiday last night, I understand." "Yes," Bernard answered. "Yes," repeated the Director, lingering, a serpent on the S. Then, suddenly raising his voice, "Ladies and gentlemen," he trumpeted. "Ladies and gentlemen." The singing of the girls over their test tubes, the preoccupied whistling of the microscopists, suddenly ceased. There was a profound silence. Everyone looked round.